Good evening, Trevor. Thank you for joining me this evening.
Good evening to you, Sue. I hope you're well.
Yes, very well. And yourself?
Oh, very well. Very well indeed for the time of year.
Yes, well, I mean, considering August was the worst August on record, how are we doing? So take me through what you were doing for August, please, Trevor, and the trials and tribulations of the month.
The trials and tribulations. Well, I have to say that probably wasn't too bad overall. We had a bit of everything weather-wise, some heat, some sun, and some rain, which was well received. At the moment, we're going through quite a dry spell, but the days are getting shorter now, so it is not so bad. In general, it has been a harvesting month, and indeed it is in full swing, with numerous vegetables being culled. So you're actually looking at every other day on certain vegetables. Otherwise, if you let them go more than that, they will possibly stop producing. And that's not what you want your hard work to be there for. So rain and sun, lawns are doing well. And this year, there isn't any browning. That is normally a case where the rain doesn't come, but as it's come at the right time, it hasn't dried out. In fact, you really don't need to water lawns because they have a habit of coming back anyway. They're very strong and sturdy. So that's been a job that hasn't needed to be done, other than the fact that you need to mow more because it's grown more. When it's really scorched a bit, then there's no need to mow the lawn. But there you go. It's one of those things. And also watering, you've got to keep on top of it in the greenhouse, in the garden, in your tubs, and especially in your tubs. I think I've said before that the smaller the tub, the more watering it needs to have. And I've been watering my tubs every day. Otherwise, the plants will shrivel. Whereas some of the vegetables, they're okay, providing you give them a good soak once or twice a week, dependent on how hot it really is. But again, in the greenhouse, you really need to water most days, especially when it's hot, tomatoes and chilies, and ensure that you've got the correct ventilation. I mean, I do put water on the greenhouse floors to create the humidity. That helps. Anything that helps. What you do not want is scorched leaves. So your shading is really important, and it has been since June, July and August. It will taper down a little bit now that we got the shorter days because the heat isn't so intensive for such a long period of time. Feeding, I keep feeding the beans once a week with an all-purpose liquid. As I've run out of my magical potion, you need to dilute it more with water, but I obviously didn't do enough this year. In fact, I shall make sure there's double amount in the shed next year. But still, the market brands are okay, nothing wrong with that. And also to feed the tomatoes and courgettes and the chilies with high potash feed. Some people use what they know as tomerite, but other varieties are available. Deadheading is of a big essence now because the flowers are, whilst they're still blooming, once you start getting into September, they possibly will not be growing at such a rate as they once were. But keep deadheading, especially dahlias. If you've got dahlias, to which I have quite a few, they seem to be prolific. And I'm deadheading every night to ensure that I get the best out of them. There will come a time when, sadly, they will not produce anymore. But until that time, I shall carry on deadheading.
Can I just ask you then about dahlias? I've got a white dahlia. I don't normally have dahlias, but I bought a beautiful white one from the garden centre, but something has just decimated all the leaves. Any idea what that could be?
It could be caterpillars, although I don't think it would be. Slugs can be a nuisance. Slugs can climb to quite high level. Now, there could be other thrips, other beetles that are doing the damage. I have to say, my dahlias have been okay. My nasturtiums suffer, but my dahlias have been okay. Is anything else around those dahlias?
My next door neighbour's got a gooseberry bush, and that was full of leaf about a month ago, and now again, leaf's been totally eaten by something, just like my dahlias.
Right. I would need to look that up to see what attacks gooseberries and what attacks dahlias, because obviously gooseberries are quite prickly plants.
Yes.
And if nothing else is around, i.e. other plants aren't being attacked, it should narrow it down. Again, I have a gooseberry bush. In fact, the gooseberries this year were pretty good, but I didn't see any signs of attack, and certainly all the leaves are still in place. So I will look that up and come next month for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. As I've said, I've been picking beans every day. And once again, if they're growing right to the top, you need to nip them off at the top. A, because you can't reach them. Well, I certainly can't, because I'm not the tallest card in the pack. And also, you don't want to expend energy into going higher and higher. You want it to concentrate on the beans within the cane. Excuse me. Now, with a lot of harvests comes a lot of surplus, and that is what I've had in August. And to keep up with it, I am being a bit like the Pied Piper and giving most of it away. Although, as I say, I do freeze, and the freezing methods are a common practice, I believe. And providing you have them within 2 or 3, 4 months, depending on what you're freezing, they're perfectly all right. And there's one thing I do not like doing is waste. I suppose at the end of the day, you could say I shouldn't grow so much, but it's just habit forming. I take after my father like that, I'm afraid. And the pickling is now completed. I have completed 16 jars of pickled onions and 6 jars of pickled lily. Now, of those 16 jars of pickled onions, 5 or 6 have had chilies opened and put into them. So in about late October, early November, they will possibly be quite potent when eaten. But I know that's a refined taste for some people.
Ready for Christmas.
Ready for Christmas indeed. But the pickled lily is normally ready 4 or 5 weeks after you do it. So whilst my last one was the 10th of August, of which I did 2 batches of 3, in theory, it should be ready in mid-September, and that's what I will aim to start delivering. Caterpillars. I think we just touched on caterpillars. It has been... When it's good for one thing, it's also good for another thing. And caterpillars is one. They have been absolutely all over my, not so much my cabbages, but certainly my kale, my Brussels and broccoli. And indeed, they have appeared a lot on my nasturtiums, to which that is why a lot of people put nasturtiums in pots near to their brassicas to distract the caterpillars onto the nasturtiums as opposed to their plants. Now, I decided to put marigolds around mine, and it doesn't seem to have had the same effect. It might have deterred other insects, but not the caterpillar. So I don't like using controlled methods. I tend to go around with a plastic glove and squish them. Pick them off. I mean, there's no other way of saying it. You've got to get rid of them. If you don't get rid of the caterpillars get rid of your brassicas for you. Simple as that. Tomatoes I continued to pick in the greenhouse, and they were slow. I said to a lot of people, how's your tomatoes? And they said it's taken some time to ripen. Now, whether that's because it's been too hot, it can be too hot for tomatoes. It may be the case, but My four different varieties, of which two are small and two are medium, are now coming to fruition. And when you're seeing your fruits go from green to red, then you should really start taking back the bottom leaves to allow light, more light to come in to ripen up those fruits. Because the last thing you really want is to have a lot of, when the light really diminishes, and certainly the daylight hours get shorter, then you'll be ending up with a lot of green tomatoes. There are ways to ripen them, and I'll come on to those later. Onions, all my onions are now dry, so I've salted, and it is important to salt out any soft ones, because soft ones will harbour or will show signs of disease. They will go soft, they will rot, and if you're hanging them up, they will then infect others around them. So I've gone through all of them, salted them, got rid of the soft ones, and I've hung some up into the shed in a cool, airy place. And there's four to a bunch. I don't plait them. I'm not that good. I just put four to a bunch, hang them on a bit of string on a hook in the shed. And the ones that are remaining, I put into trays so that they're there, ready to go straight into the kitchen. And the real small ones I put to one side and use for salads and what have you. But it's always good to keep checking your produce, because you've only got to have, as they say, one bad apple, and it could affect all the others. With the ones that are in the garage, I have got some onion nets. So I think later on I will put them in the nets and then possibly hang them back up in the shed. Rhubarb, as they say. I stopped pulling the rhubarb after the first week of August. They normally say about at the end of July, but there was a few young shoots there, stalks. So I decided to pull those and then said, right, that's it. We will let the rhubarb die back in the fullness of time. And once they start going limp and they go yellow, you pick them out, pull them out and put them onto the compost heap. It would take a bit of time, but if you carried on picking the rhubarb, all you'll find is it would A, be mushy, and B, it would be stringy. And that's no good for anyone's palate. They really are best from late April right through to mid-July, and then they tend to taper off a bit. When they have all gone, all you'll see is just the crowns lying on the ground, in the ground rather. And this year, and I will come on to that for maybe next month or October, is I will, what's called divide. I would just take a spade and just slice through what I've got out there. Otherwise it gets too big, too unmanageable. And you can actually give away part of the crowns to other people. So that is all good work. But I'll come on to that next month. Saving seeds. Now, August is a good month, a very good month, as long with September and October for saving seeds. Now, I've started saving foxgloves as they've died off. And you wait until the flowers have gone, and they just look like sticks with buds growing up, and they can be very tall. What I tend to do is wait till they brown off a bit, and I get a big bag. It can be a plastic bag because it's only going to be a short period of time. And a large plastic, like a bin bag, and just cover the foxglove, go two thirds of the way down, snip it off with secateurs, turn it back over, and then you've captured the seed, because they self-set very quickly. Well, I say very quickly, they self-set. They probably won't be quick. But once you've turned the bag over, give it a good shake, and it will shake all the seeds into the bag. And then once you've got rid of the stalks and any debris that's fallen off, you've got your seeds. And the one thing to remember, like with all seeds, is when you store them, and store them in paper bags or envelopes, never in plastic, otherwise they will just sweat and rot, is to ensure you label them. And with a foxglove, if you can ever remember what colour that foxglove was, it would be advantageous, because you can then mark up, yes, foxglove blue, foxglove this, that and the other. Unless you want to be surprised and have a mixture, no problem. But mark it up as to what it is. Nasturtiums, they produce funny little bald seeds. And they're like a small pea, really. And they just fall off. They just fall off the flowering head. And they will be green, and then you just collect them, and then in the fullness of time, they will go a darker colour. And in the end, they will go a real, like a deep brown colour. And that is where I grew all my nasturtiums this year from last year's seed. And it's money for nothing, really is money for nothing, if you've got the time and you've got the patience. Marigolds is probably one of the most prolific seeds that you can see. They are probably about 30 or more seeds to a flower head, and they're black and white, and they're about half an inch, quarter of an inch long. So you just clip off the dead orange piece. That sounds very technical, doesn't it? Orange piece, and then you're left with these seeds inside, and you just shake them out. And I've got a tray full of them at the moment, and I should just put them into little envelopes. And last year I had three envelopes. Well, I only needed half an envelope, but you store, and then you give them away to people and say it is really money for nothing. Lupins, I haven't got too many lupins, but I was able to save the seed again this year. And they are very easy, because they're just small, round, brown, black seeds in, like, if you will, a pea pod that forms from the dead lupins. And you just wait until they've dried, not wait too long, otherwise they will just, the pea pod will open up and deposit the lupins on the ground, which defeats the object of saving them. But if you wait until they just opened, or just look as if they're going to open, you open them up like a pea, get them out, let them dry a bit further, and again put them into a brown paper bag, that is. The only thing I planted out in August was the last of my wigwam French beans. Now, they will probably be ready the mid or back end of September going into October. And that is not unusual for late planted French beans. They are quick growers. The only thing you had to ensure, and you won't do too much about it because you won't cover them, is if you got an exceptionally early frost, because they will not tolerate frost. They will just look at you and keel over, I'm afraid. But so, with those wigwams, it means I've now got seven wigwams, of which the first one I planted a few months ago, or 3 months ago, is now ready for pulling up, because that's been expended. And that's the whole idea of succession growing. I've got another one that is nearly finished, and I've got three on the go, as they say, which is producing different ratios of beans, and then these other two will come along later. As for marrows, I think I ought to cut back on how many I have in the garden next year. I thought, this is a doddle grow marrows. I'd never grown them before. I knew roughly that, obviously an oversight, I knew what they were, but I didn't realise that each plant would be so prolific. I put four plants in, of which one has produced one marrow, and the others between them have produced 16 to date, and I've still got four that are on the go in the garden, if you will. It's a funny old vegetable, because it's not everyone's cup of tea. I don't mind them playing with other vegetables, and some people I know do actually stuff them with sausage meat and whatever, but it's it can be blander than what a courgette is, but then a courgette is a lot smaller. Compost. I kept adding to the compost, because as vegetables get expended, or even flowers and whatever, where are you going to put them? Well, you put them on the compost. So it's absolutely important to keep that going. Keep it going, tossing it over different layers, and in dry weather, giving it a good water and adding a heat enhancer. And as I say, ensure you've got the different layers. I have got some wood chipping cat litter. I've now acquired quite a bit of cardboard, so that will keep me going over the winter with my other load of compost, because one will die down and you will, what they call, close it to let it rot down until the early spring, and then you've got another one on the go. Chard is coming along nicely. The one thing you can say about chard, especially if you get the rainbow variety, is that it's got multicoloured plants, and that's the stalks. And I've got yellow, red, purple, white. The leaves are more or less the same, but they are grown. They should be ready sometime in September. Remember to hoe it. They don't like competition, and to water it if you have to, if it's going to be maybe an Indian summer. Weeding continues apace, although with the dry weather, I tend to like to hand weed, especially around the beans, because I want to get the roots out. Hoeing is absolutely fine, but you're just nipping off the top and letting it wilt in the sun, and then you're coming back again to do it again in about a week's time, depending on the rampancy of that particular weed. Peppers and chilies. Towards the end of the month, I picked my first chilies, which is always an accomplishment. I've got a small fruit, which is called an Apache, and I've got a red patio pepper, although it's in the greenhouse. So they do take a long time to grow and develop their fruits. That's why you tendency to, if you're going to grow from seed, you start in January or February. It is easier, to be honest, to actually go to a garden centre and take one that's taken, or buy one that's taken the hard work out of the growing, because that is the difficult bit. It's like a balloon. The hardest part of blowing a balloon up is getting it started.
Okay, well, look, we're going to a commercial break, and then when we come back, you can discuss what you're going to be doing in September. Welcome back to Trevor's Monthly Gardening Diary, and we'll carry on with what Trevor did in August and then what he will be doing in September.
Peppers and chilies. Towards the end of the month, I picked my first chilies, which is always an accomplishment. I've got a small fruit, which is called an Apache, and I've got a red patio pepper, although it's in the greenhouse. So they do take a long time to grow and develop their fruits. That's why you tendency to, if you're going to grow from seed, you start in January or February. It is easier, to be honest, to actually go to a garden centre and take one that's taken, or buy one that's taken the hard work out of the growing, because that is the difficult bit. It's like a balloon. The hardest part of blowing a balloon up is getting it started.
And now we're going to look forward to September. So off you go, Trevor.
Right. Again, some of these are probably repeats from the previous month, but certain jobs don't just stop on the 31st of a month and start on the 1st of the next month. Harvesting will continue until such times as they go, basically. I have found that the courgettes, because I didn't plant them all at the same time, but there is two that now will be dug up because they've expended themselves. And this will be happening throughout September. So keep an eye out of what needs to be removed, because there's nothing worse than seeing horrible material vegetables in the garden when they've gone past their sell-by date. So remove. So that's what I should be doing. I will continue to feed the crops in the greenhouse and out and outside until about middle of the month. And that, I said about the middle of the month, the growing starts to reduce, the light and the heat reduces, and obviously you don't want to expend energy on feeding things that are saying, I've had enough, I ain't going to grow no more. And with the light and everything, the growth naturally slows down. Also, the days are getting shorter, so light fades. Consider even taking more leaf off your tomatoes. But importantly, in about a couple of weeks' time, 3 weeks' time, if we don't get that Indian summer, it's worth considering removing the shading from your greenhouse or greenhouses to allow more light in. Remember, you're not going to get the extensive heat and you're not going to get the longevity of the heat in the shorter days. Plus the fact, as it gets slightly cooler, the natural ventilation of the window and the doors open should prevail and should be okay and avoid the shading. But as I say, the light is the key to actually ripening your crops. Check regularly the stored potatoes and anything else that you've stored, because I've mentioned it before, check them, get rid of those that are affected. Some people store apples in drawers. Absolutely brilliant way of doing it. But in my case, I don't do that. I don't grow apples, but do check your potatoes. And remember, in the Hessian sacks or the paper sacks, which the big paper sacks, and they're normally double lined, ensure they're not in full sun. They're inside in a cool place and in a dark place, not absolutely dark, but not with sun coming in. And when you do check your potatoes, make sure there hasn't been any rogue ones got in that have got green, because the green area of a potato is poisonous. You should have checked that before you put them in, but ensure that they don't go through the system to the pan. The actual buds will not probably start growing, what they call the eyes or the roses on the spuds, until about mid-October, November. And that's when you'll be checking your potatoes for other things like that to nip them in the bud, because you don't want them prematurely sprouting. The lawns, well, I plan to scarify both of my lawns, one lightly, one a little bit heavier. During mid September, I shall keep mowing. I won't spike my lawns until October, but I will mow until such times as it becomes not growing anymore. Because mid September to mid October is the ideal time for actually sowing grass seed. You either do it in April, or you do it in mid-September to mid-October, because that is when the temperature is not too hot, you've got the damp around, there's enough warmth in the soil to germinate the grass, and it gives it a fighting chance to hold off over winter. So that's what I'll be doing with my lawns. When you scarify, the easiest way to scarify is with a rake. That's the exercise way of doing it. But it obviously just gives one depth of scarifying. A machine, I've got an electric one, and it has, and basically it's a little rake on rollers. And I will set it to quite a high sound. I don't want to get everything out. And when I come to spike, again, I have got a push spike little gadget. It hasn't got an engine in it. I'm the engine. But I tend to get the exercise by using a garden fork. Now, when you are spiking, you've got to remember you really want the ground a little bit damp. It's no good throwing the fork into the ground. It bounces back up at you because it's too hard and it doesn't do it any good. tubs. End of September, I'll remove the spent plants. I'm removing them as they become defunct now anyway. Lobelia is one. The geraniums are dying off, and Sophenias, because they look terrible. So I shall gradually get rid of that. And when they are empty, they will be replaced by bulbs. I've saved a lot from last year, but I always top up every year. And I was always told that tulips are best bought new every year. Whether that's true or not, I'll do a control and an experiment. But I will take a third of the compost out and I'll put that on the compost heap and revive those tubs with fresh compost. And then the cycle goes again. And when I put the bulbs in, you look to see what the depth or the height of the bulbs are going to be and you plant accordingly. I will not be sowing anything in September other than maybe an area where the beans will be, have been, of a green manure. And that is basically a manure that you dig into the ground and it grows very quickly. It's like sometimes you can get a mustard manure. I've got a green manure and as I say, you water it and it grows very quickly and you just dig it into the ground. On another area of my ground, I shall be having some horse manure delivered. A friend of mine said he's got some and he will deliver it. You just have to make sure and that will be for my winter digging. You just have to make sure you do not dig in. Well, you do not. You shouldn't dig in fresh manure into the ground. They call it green, so it hasn't had a chance to rot down. Normally, it takes 3 to 3.5 months, as a rule, to rot down enough for you to be able to use it as an addition to your garden. And most gardens, certainly vegetable gardens, do need a kick of fertilizer manure over the winter so that they can start performing again in the new year. Ensuring in September as well, as your crops die down and everything, is to get rid of them as soon as possible so that the leaves, especially brassicas, although brassicas, you won't get rid of the plants. It's just that they drop off bottom leaves. They go yellow, they go down onto the ground, and they can harbour disease and harbour quite a few things. So I get a rake, I rake those yellow ones up, and I don't really put them onto the compost. I tend to put those into the takeaway green bin because you don't want to infect the compost if there's anything nasty in there. But get rid of the debris, and as you spend with the beans and everything like that, I will cut them up. And I tend to, because there's so much bind on beans and French beans, I tend to cut it at the bottom when it's all finished, and that'll be at the end of September or early October. Cut it at the bottom. So at the moment, it's all green, but I won't do it yet. But when you're finished, don't just cut it down straight away. Go along, cut the binds at the bottom, allow it a good week and a half or 2 weeks, and it will naturally die back. So the space that you'll be using in your green bin will be narrower. You won't have overcrowded your bin. Instead of getting 4 wigwams into a bin, you will get the whole 7 into the bin. But I won't do it that way anyway. But cut it at the back. But always remember to try to cut it above on a runner bin. At the bottom, you will see that they call it a node. It's a little bit bulbous, and it's roughly about 3 inches from the ground, and it's called a node. And that harbours, it actually has got nitrogen in it. And so if you cut above that and get rid of the bind whenever it dies back, later on you can dig that node with the root back into the ground. So it revitalizes the ground to some extent. At least it, every little bit helps. Carrots, I will leave into those that are in the ground, I'm going to leave until I want them. So I can just dig them up, providing it's not so wet that it becomes unmanageable. But the ones in the troughs, which are the ones I'm eating at the moment, I will dig up as I go, but I will also freeze them. I did a trough last week and froze them, but they were very small carrots, but it's okay for certain dishes. With tomatoes, I shall keep removing the leaves from the toms until there is no more. As simple as that. The green manure. Nope, we've done green manure. Peppers and chilies. We'll consider removing the shading for those because they do take a long time. And the problem is I grow all my stuff in the greenhouse, and you do want to go through your greenhouse before it gets too cold and dank and whatever, is to clear your greenhouse. And I'll come on to that next month, of cleaning the greenhouse, because that is so very important. So get yourself some disinfectant, because that is the best way to deal with it. And the other thing, a lot of things I would do in September is tidy my borders. They're a little bit hickledy-pickledy at the moment, I have to say, because you never know. Well, I never know. I'm not really the greatest flower grower, but some of my flowers have outgrown other flowers that have more or less, I suppose you could say, they've suffocated them. So I've got to rearrange that next year. But as things become die down, you can start clearing as you go, and therefore you start seeing the spaces where other things were. So best to do it as you go and see, and make notes as to what you should or should not put in there next year. And also make notes while you remember. It's no good in November saying, well, what did that look like? You've got to do it now to say, was that a good year for this? Was that a good year for that? It's imperative to make notes, and also it helps plan for next year. And pot cleaning. I know it's September, but pots will become cluttering in the greenhouse, cluttering in the sheds, and cluttering everywhere. But it is important that they are clean. Now, unless you want a whole raft of pots and spending a few days just cleaning pots, it's suggested that you clean as you go in batches. I tend to clean them, make sure they're dry of any soil, and at the moment you can leave them outside to dry if you haven't done already. And then I get a bowl of warm water, put some disinfectant in there, just a mild solution, and then I wash them thoroughly, and then I can stand them outside or on racks in the greenhouse if I've got room. But it is important to ensure that you look in all the nooks and crannies to make sure that you haven't got any hidden bugs in there, because they will go in there over winter, and they will produce a little offspring in there, and that doesn't do you any favors in the new year. Although it is best to give a rinse in the new year as well. That's all I'm doing for September, Sue. Well, it's very difficult because this is what you're thinking you're doing. What you'll end up doing might be added twofold as jobs come to you.
Yes, yes. Well, yeah. Well, that's why we every month we see what we actually did do. Okay, well, that's the end of part two, and then we'll be back in a minute with part three with listeners' questions. Welcome back to Trevor's Monthly Gardening Diary with Trevor Mallion. We've had parts one and two. We're now going to part three, where Trevor discusses and answers listeners' questions. So far away, Trevor.
Okie dokie. First question I had was, how do I ripen green tomatoes? As I said earlier, the normal thing is that when it gets higher and higher, the chances of some of the tomatoes going from green to red diminish. So how do you get them to go red? There is, as I'm aware, there is a couple of ways to do that. One is to, well, you remove the leaves, as I've said before. But if it's getting to that time, then cut the green tomatoes off and put them in a paper bag. Put them in a paper bag, and ideally put them in a paper bag with a mature banana. Now, a banana will give off ethane gas, and ethane gas is what turns tomatoes red. Now, they produce their own during the course of the season, but that is mainly through the growing season. Now, when the light diminishes and what they rely on, then so does the ethane gas that they produce themselves. So putting a banana in will speed up that process. Now, you can either put it in a paper bag or you put it into a drawer. Either way, but again, don't put it into a plastic bag. So if you can do that, best of luck, and see how it goes. Now, another question I had was, can I put strawberry runners into pots? Now, if you grow strawberries, and whether you grow them directly into the garden or whether you grow them in larger pots, you will notice that they spread well. They have what is known as runners. And when they get to some nice little bit of soil, a lot of the time, they will send out feelers into the ground and set root. They'll carry on, but they'll set root. And you can actually, if you can water those, but dig those up, put them into a pot, wait a few weeks or a month before they've matured and they've set their roots, and pick them up, put them into a pot of compost, and then put that to one side, and they should actually set. And then the following year, you can put them out or put them in a different spot to where you've had ones previously, or put them in another big pot. It's an easy way to, especially if you've got a good strawberry plant that you're used to and it produces the necessary fruit, it's a good way of reproducing that good fruit elsewhere. And again, it does cost you in terms of compost, but it doesn't really cost you, does it? How can I control flea beetle? Now, flea beetle is a little bit different to a lily beetle. A lily beetle is confined mainly to a lily and is red, whereas a flea beetle attacks brassicas, gives little holes in them. And what they start off in, and they are also very dark green or brown or black, and they start off near the ground, and they attack they attack the roots, and then they work their, it doesn't kill the plant as a rule, but then it works its way up and makes holes in the brassica. Now, one of the best way to control it is to water around the roots, because they don't like water around the roots, and this will be earlier in the season. So if you've got dry conditions, water around the roots. If it's raining, it will do the job for you, and especially earlier on, because the plants won't be as tall as what they will be later on. Although brassicas do take, as a rule, apart from the cabbages, they take a long time to grow. So that's the flea beetle. And the last question I had was, when should I remove the shading or the shading paint or any shading from the greenhouse? Now, shading paint should be removed as soon as the outside temperatures drop. Any overheating can be controlled by your own ventilation. I think I said earlier, with the windows and the doors, keep them open. It's best wiped off, you can wipe it off with a cloth. Simple as that. Wipe it off with a cloth. I do each year. It's amazing stuff, because withstands rain throughout the summer, or what throws at us, and we've had some heavy rain this year. It withstands that. It doesn't remove it. So you get, obviously, it's got to be dry before you do it, preferably. So you do it along with the dust. So you take the shading off, and then with either a wet cloth or even a pressure washer, clean it, because you obviously will have had certain activity probably with birds, because they don't care where they deposit. So make the glass nice and clear. And also, while you're at it, it's good to check out any breakages that you have in your greenhouse, or anything that needs repairing on the outside. Now is the time to do it, not when it's cold and dank and raining. So they were the questions, Sue.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Trevor. I probably, when we've got a bit of time left, I usually try and find a recipe. And as you've got 16 marrows, I think I will go and find a stuffed marrow recipe for the listeners.
I think that would be a good idea. Yes, okay. I'm having marrow tonight.
Okay. All right, Trevor. Well, thank you very much indeed, as always. And we'll see you again next month.
It's been a pleasure. So I hope the listeners are having a good a season in the garden as I am.
Jolly good. Well, happy gardening, and we'll talk again soon. Bye for now.
Bye for now. Bye.
As promised, here is a recipe for stuffed melon, and it comes from Nigella Lawson. Serves 2 to 4. 200 grams of lamb, 200 grams of minced beef, a melon, 2 small pieces, 40 grams of rice, scented bell rice is the best, 65 grams of onions, dry, medium-sized pieces, 40 grams of margarine, 40 grams of butter, 50 grams of peeled almonds, 50 grams of peeled pistachio nuts, 25 grams of currants, 1 teaspoon of fresh rosemary, fresh dill, fresh parsley, 1/4 of a bunch of herbs, another of your choice if you wish, 250 millilitres of water, fresh parsley, and 1 teaspoon of salt. And now the method. Boil rice in salty water for 5 minutes. Wash and chop the parsley and dill. Slice the onions. Wash the currants. Keep almonds and pistachios in hot water for 10 minutes, then peel. Melt the butter in a pan and cook the onion until the colour changes to brown. Then add all ingredients and cook for 5 minutes. Divide melons in half. After cleaning the seeds, carve a part of the melon and put it aside. Fill the prepared ingredients into the melon and put it in the oven at medium temperature for 15 minutes. In a separate bowl, melt the butter and sauté the carved melon, water and parsley for 5 minutes to prepare a melon sauce. And serve the stuffed melon on a plate. Now, I would also add that if I put it in the oven, I will put it in foil. That's just my little tip as well. Well, it sounds very nice. I will give it a go myself. So do enjoy, won't you?